How to best manage Maine's bear, moose, deer, and turkey populations. Maine's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is in the midst of a big project, rewriting the management plans for four of Maine's most iconic species: deer, moose, bears, and turkeys. The committee working on this released a draft plan earlier this month, and soon there will be public hearings on the plan. IFNW is balancing many considerations: the health of the animals, of course, but also the desires of hunters, farmers, woodlot owners, businesses, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with a biologist heading up the process, as well as the head of the Small Woodlot Owners of Maine. And we want to hear from you. What considerations do you believe are the most important for managing Maine's big game wildlife species? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is in the process of completing a draft plan for managing the big game species in Maine. We're talking deer, bear, moose, and wild turkey. The process includes a lot of public input, and our guests today want to hear from you. With me in the studio, Nate Webb. He is a biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife and is heading up the process. Tom Doak is executive director of the Small Woodland Owners Association of Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you today. Nate, I want to start with the whole concept of a wildlife management plan. What is the purpose of having a wildlife management plan? Is it designed to promote and benefit hunting in Maine, or is it something else?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me today. I'm glad to be here. The department has undertaken comprehensive wildlife management planning since the 1960s, approximately. And over that time, the process has really evolved. And essentially what we're trying to accomplish is gather input from the public to direct how we go about managing Maine's wildlife. And in the case of this particular plan, as you mentioned, we're focused on those four big game species: moose, bear, deer, and turkey. And what this plan will do is essentially lay out the department's approach to managing those four species for the next 10 to 15 years. It does include some aspects of hunting, but it's much broader than that. It includes what we'll do to resolve vehicle collisions and how we'll balance deer populations with moose populations in northern Maine, and how we'll resolve issues or work on issues like Lyme disease that can result from impacts of ticks and high deer density. So it's very broad. It does include some hunting components, but it's much, much more comprehensive than just hunting.
And why is it being rewritten now? Is this by statute that every certain number of years it's looked at, or is it because your commissioner wants to look at it? What's the reason for this process right now?
Right. Historically, we've undertaken a review of our species management plans every 15 years, and these four species are all up for renewal. That's something we do on a fairly regular basis just to make sure that we're accomplishing what the public wants us to accomplish with these species.
Okay, and where are we in the process? I know it's been months. You've been having public hearings, meetings of the steering committee. Was it January 5th? There was a draft plan released. Is that right?
Not yet. We're actually working on compiling the information right now. We have been working on the process for just over a year. We started off the process with a very intensive period of public input and public consultation. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. We've been working with a steering committee and also four subcommittees, one targeted on each of the four species, to take that public input, that public consultation, and craft draft goals, objectives, and management strategies for each of the four species. We're in the process right now of actually writing the plan itself, and we'll be releasing that for public comment sometime in the next couple months.
So in the next couple months, and when that comes out, there'll be another chance for public comment and people to weigh in. I want to turn to you, Tom. I know that IFNW has actively solicited input from many different groups, and I understand that you have been present personally at almost every meeting. You represent SWOM, Woodland Owners of Maine. What are your group's primary concerns? Why are you there at every meeting?
And thank you for having me on the show. Wildlife in Maine is owned by the public, but it resides on private land largely. And so landowners are tied into the management of wildlife in this state. And you can't manage wildlife in Maine without also involving landowners. So it's kind of a unique situation. So my involvement is as a landowner who ends up dealing a lot with wildlife issues. And whether you're a hunter or just a person who likes to look at wildlife, I've never met a landowner who doesn't like wildlife in some way or another. And so this is kind of a really interesting process for us. And the access to wildlife in Maine is across essentially 90% of it is on private land. So if you're a bird watcher or a hunter, you're accessing private land to do that. And so it's a very important process for us. The other part of it is traditionally in Maine that these plans have been done species by species and almost in a vacuum and instead of multiple species together, because managing for one species may conflict with another, but we've in the past done them in silos and then hope somehow it all comes together. This is a little different. The department's done a nice job of saying, let's take these four at least, put them together and look at them together how they interrelate, because there are potential conflicts between managing for deer and managing for moose or bear and those kind of things.
So let me ask you then, Tom, Nate, why these four? And, you know, why not six or why not eight? How does the health of these four species have particular bearing on one another?
Yeah, these four species are obviously very high-profile species. They're large. In some cases, they have the potential to cause fairly substantial conflicts with people in terms of vehicle collisions and property damage. They also are species that there is a lot of interest in by the hunting community. They're pursued by a lot of hunters in the state. And it made sense to us to take these four species and look at them, as Tom said, in a cohesive way and making sure that our management programs for one species weren't having unintended consequences for another and having those joint conversations and looking at these four together. We do undertake other planning efforts that look at groups of species. Just a few years ago, and Tom was involved with this process as well, we developed the State Wildlife Action Plan, which dealt with actually hundreds of species in the state, mostly non-game species, invertebrates, bird species, reptiles, amphibians. These four species, they're a little different in terms of their profile, the potential for conflict they can have with people, and the interests that people have in them, both by the general public for viewing and also by the hunting community.
I kind of understand instinctively bear, moose, deer, but why are turkeys in this group? Why are wild turkeys in the group?
Turkeys are big game, according to statute in Maine, and they are in a number of other states as well. Although there was a recent change to allow hunting of wild turkeys with a small game license as well. But turkeys are similar to the other three in terms of their profile. They're very popular for viewing by the general public, very popular for hunting. We manage them similar to the other three species in terms of requiring special permits. We're fairly conservative in the hunting of turkeys, and we had quite a bit of conversation about that during the development of the plan. We may talk more about that today. But they actually fall pretty nicely in, from our perspective with the other three species in terms of the complexity of their management, the potential for conflict with landowners that they can cause. So they really were a nice fit with the other three, even though they may not traditionally be thought of as a big game species.
I want to talk about the species one by one in just a minute. But, Tom, I want to ask you, what are the concerns you're hearing from the folks in your organization? Are they coming to you and saying, please, please, please make sure they do something about this?
On some of the species more than others, probably turkeys. Interesting, the conversation about turkeys. Probably hear more about turkeys than any of the others. Maybe deer may be right up there. But the concerns about turkeys the concern is that we've been so successful, they're starting to become pests. And a lot of people almost see them as pests. And I think that's unfortunate. We don't want that to happen. There are landowners have concerns about regenerating their forests, and are they going to eat all the food? We have a project where we're trying to restore American chestnut to the state of Maine. It's gone. We're trying to bring it back, and we've been doing some plantings out and about of American chestnuts, and we find that we have a difficult time getting those plants to come up because the turkeys will eat all of the chestnuts that we put out. So there's things like that. So they're becoming a pest, and so we wanted – that's one. And the other one I think is interesting on deer in particular. Deer is one of those species that it's regulated – landowners are regulated not because it's a species that's in trouble or endangered, but is regulated in order to keep populations, huntable populations. So it's a kind of a unique situation where landowners are regulated and try to keep populations up for a reason, not because they're in the species is in trouble, but because there's a policy that we want to have a certain number of deer. And that's kind of a unique situation, and that creates some conflicts too.
Okay. So let's go by the species one by one. Since we were already talking about wild turkeys, I think it's so interesting, Tom, the whole interaction with trying to renew the resource of the American chestnut tree. I didn't know that. What are you hearing pro and con about turkeys? I mean, some people are so excited to finally see so many wild turkeys, and then some people consider them as pests. It seems to me right out of the gate that this is going to be a tough discussion.
Absolutely. Turkeys are, they're very unique of the four species in terms of the public reaction and the public perspectives. Turkeys are relatively new on the Maine landscape in modern times. Historically, they were present in the state. The department undertook a very major effort to bring them back, and they've thrived. They've done, I think, better than we ever imagined. And they're living pretty much all across the state now. They're in Arista County. They're widely distributed, and they're doing very well. The public perspectives towards turkeys are very interesting. Certainly, we're very aware of the conflicts that turkeys can cause. We receive those calls and do our best to work with landowners to resolve them. We did ask during our public consultation work, as part of that work, we did a very broad and scientific public survey. We used a nationally renowned company to do that work for us. And it was somewhat surprising that the majority of the general public was actually pretty happy with turkey management. Only about 1 in 4 would like to see the population decrease. So there is that perspective out there, but it's not perhaps as prevalent among the general public as you might think. Our department receives between 60 and 70 complaints regarding turkeys per year across the whole state. So it's not a big number. We receive a lot more complaints for some other species like beaver, for example, that can cause some pretty severe property damage in some cases. So our message to the public regarding turkeys is that if you are having a problem, call us. There are tools available to help resolve some of those issues. In general, the public expressed pretty widespread support for turkey management. We asked the public to rate the department's turkey management program. Only about 10% rated it as poor. The majority felt that we're doing a pretty good job. So there's some issues that we need to keep working on and resolve. We've had a lot of discussions about some potential things that we could change or work on to help improve public perception towards turkeys and help resolve some of those conflicts that people are experiencing. But for the most part, people are pretty happy with turkeys.
I know someone personally who had a turkey go right through their windshield near the Portland Jetport on I-295. How common is that? How common are turkeys crashing into cars in Maine?
I would say it's not rare. Certainly, turkeys aren't likely to cause the same level of damage when in a vehicle collision as a moose or a deer or a bear would. They're quite a bit smaller, obviously. But we do get those reports. It is certainly an issue. My sense is that it's not a major issue in terms of property damage or public safety.
I will say I think the farmers have – there are a number of farmers that have issues with turkeys as well. So it's not just woodland owners. It's farmers getting into their crops and – I think a couple of things that have come up in the discussions we've had is that we need a better estimate of turkey populations in Maine. We don't have a good handle on turkey populations, and we don't have a good process yet. And that's going to be one of the findings, I'm sure, of the group. But also, I think the department's been very successful in getting turkeys and probably a little very conservative in their management. And I think there's a general sense that there needs to be some shifting there.
What kind of farmers? Is it all farmers, or are there particular kinds of farms that seem to be
the apple like
people
the apple
like turkeys?
Because if you peck an apple, it changes the value. I know some of the berry folks have issues with turkeys and, for the blueberries or berries in general, I think some of those farmers have problems. I think some of the dairy farmers also, when they have their bales wrapped in plastic and the turkeys are pecking through them, then that opens up that bale. And those are the kind of things you hear a concern about farmers, from farmers. So, I mean, I think we're supportive of the turkey restoration. We're just saying we ought to take another look. Let's take a good look at the management. And now that we've been successful, let's look at this in a way that manages the turkeys, because I think there's been a concern. We don't want to lose the progress that's been made, but there's some adjustments that are going to come, I think, in turkeys.
Okay, some adjustment in turkeys.
Yeah,
maybe the quote
so.
For the day.
I think so.
Nate, why don't I ask you next about deer? And boy, I know that we could probably have a whole program talking about Maine's deer population alone. But what are you looking at? I understand that there's just a really major problem with Lyme disease in deer. So that's probably the biggest difference between 15 years ago when you looked at managing the deer population, right?
It's definitely an issue, and I would say it's not just Lyme disease. There are other tick-borne diseases that are becoming more common as well, and most of those are carried by the deer tick, which is the same tick that carries Lyme disease. Deer are an interesting challenge here in Maine, mostly because there's so much variability from southern coastal Maine to the far north with climate and the habitat and basically the severity of winter, which deer aren't very good at surviving deep snow and cold temperatures for extended periods. So we have a situation in southern and coastal Maine in particular where in some cases deer densities are quite high, higher than we would like. There's some challenges to managing deer in those situations because of things like access to land for hunting and ordinances that may prevent the discharge of firearms and other things that make it challenging for us to manage populations of deer at levels that may reduce the likelihood of some of those diseases. And then in northern Maine, we're faced with a situation that the winters are quite a bit more severe, and there's fewer deer than many people would like to see in big parts of northern and western and down eastern Maine. So deer are a unique challenge for us. We put a lot of effort into deer management. There's a lot of stakeholders that are very interested in how we manage deer, and it's something that we will continue to work on and try to find the right balance all across the state.
Let me ask you about managing deer. I understand in places where there is judged to be an overpopulation of deer that you manage that by how many hunting permits you might give out. But what about in northern Maine, where many people would like to see more deer? How can the state make a difference?
Yeah, that is a challenge. The first thing that we do is in wildlife management districts, which are large areas within which we manage many wildlife species. In those districts where deer densities or deer numbers are below our department goals, we don't issue doe permits in those districts. So there is hunting allowed, but it's only for bucks, for male deer, and that allows those does to hopefully survive and reproduce. So that's the first thing. The other thing, and this is probably more important, is that we work very closely with landowners, and in most of northern Maine, it's large industrial landowners, to try to create and manage wintering habitat for deer, sort of heavy conifer cover, hemlock, cedar, spruce that allows deer to basically survive the winter. And that's a major focus of our department. And like Tom said, and I would reiterate this, the vast majority of the wildlife in Maine lives on private land. And it's really up to the goodwill of the landowners to do some of those things that benefit wildlife. And it's a lot to ask, but for the most part, we have very high success working with landowners. Most want to do the right thing for wildlife. And it is a challenge for us to manage some of those habitats in northern Maine, but we have good relationships with landowners, which makes that work quite a bit better.
And talk about your organization, Tom, and managing habitat for deer. I'm guessing that the perfect habitat for deer is not always what the
right.
people who own the land want to do with it. They don't want
right.
to leave it there and let small plants, small trees,
yeah.
and shrubs survive.
Yeah, I agree with Nate. I think most landowners are very willing to manage and want to know. They want that the right information. They're also concerned when populations get too high and they start impacting the environment and the type of trees growing. And you see that in where there are high density areas. I would say that I give the department a lot of credit on the deer management discussions we've had, the relationship about ticks and tick-borne diseases. Because it's not a landowner issue, it's not a hunting issue, it's a public health issue that we're facing, and I don't think people appreciate it yet. But the need to manage the deer populations, and there's some pretty good evidence that if you can manage the deer populations to a certain, keep them at a certain level or below that, you will reduce the tick population and you will reduce the chance of a tick-borne disease. And I think that's going to be one of the big debates about wildlife management in the next few years, about the public health concerns around tick-borne diseases.
We do have to take a break. I know we haven't talked about moose or bear yet. We'll do that when we get back. We'll also take your calls, 1-800-399-3566, our email talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the law firm of Eaton Peabody, in partnership with Husson University, hosting the Smart Business Seminar Series, February 15th, eatonpeabody.com.
Every time you open your eyes,
our photoreceptor cells respond to about 1/10 trillionth of the spectrum of light.
And just from that, your brain builds a perception of what you see.
And then we believe that that is what the world, quote unquote, looks like. It turns out that's not true. There's a lot more going on in the world around us.
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about sight and our four other senses, that's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us this evening at 11 o'clock. This week, Maine Public Radio is trying out Indivisible, a brand new national public radio program and conversation on the transitions taking place in Washington and around the country. This week through Thursday, Indivisible will air live at 8 o'clock each evening for a recap of the day's news and events and for a live national conversation that listeners here in Maine can take part in. With the addition of Indivisible in our schedule this week at 8 o'clock, the rebroadcast of Maine Calling will move an hour later to 9. Again, this program is in our schedule this week on a trial basis. Your comments are welcome at comments@mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the programming, Managing Big Game in Our State. With me in the studio, Nate Webb, who is a biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Tom Doak is the executive director of the Small Woodland Owners Association of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And I do want to get to calls and comments in just a minute, but first we want to go through the other two species, bear. How is the bear population in Maine, and what are the considerations as you rewrite the plan?
Bear are doing very, very well. We're fortunate in Maine to have a very comprehensive long-term monitoring program where we track bear numbers and bear health and reproduction. And bears are doing very well. The population is growing. The bear population is expanding further into central and southern and coastal Maine. And that, I think, is our main challenge with bear management, is as bears expand their range further south into parts of the state where most of Maine's public lives and Maine's population lives, the potential for conflict between people and bears is going to grow quite rapidly.
How far south are we seeing bears?
We occasionally see bears across the state. What we keep a closer eye on is female bears with cubs, sort of reproductive bears. They're coming pretty close to Portland. They're getting pretty widely distributed, and we have some fairly significant concerns as to how things will go if that population continues to expand and ultimately increases in parts of the state where there's just so many people and there's so many opportunities for people to come in conflict with bears.
Tom, thoughts about bears?
Well, the issues, there aren't that many landowner issues with bears. I think in the discussions that we've been involved in from our point of view is that we want to make sure the department is creative and has the ability to deal with wildlife issues as they arise. And one of my concerns, or one of my organization's concerns, is that the department be able to deal with these issues efficiently. And sometimes they have the authority to deal with wildlife issues, and sometimes they don't. And even if they do, there's often a very long process for dealing with some of these things. And our concerns have been that the department needs to have the kind of these tools to deal with these issues. But bear in general are not an issue for most landowners because they don't really impact the environment quite like these other species that we're talking about.
All right. And moose, Nate, I know I've seen the horrible, heart-wrenching pictures of moose just covered in ticks. How much of Maine's moose population is affected by these horrible tick infestations, and what can be done about it, and how is that a part of your planning?
Yeah, that's a big part of our plan. We have a very extensive ongoing research project underway right now with moose in collaboration with both New Hampshire and Vermont. And we're learning a lot. We're just in the early stages. What we are seeing is that moose in northern Maine seem to be doing quite a bit better than moose further south in central and southern Maine. And the impact of ticks doesn't seem to be as severe as you go north, likely due to climate, but we're still looking into the reasons. I would say that Maine still has a very robust moose population. We have more moose in Maine than the rest of the country combined, except for Alaska. So we have a lot of moose in Maine. We want the public to be aware that we're taking the tick issue very seriously. We're looking at it. We're investing a lot of resources to understand it better. But the sky isn't falling with regard to moose. There are some impacts from ticks, but moose are still, by and large, doing quite well in the state.
It seems to me that there are two sort of overriding issues that that, you know, perhaps you didn't deal with 15 years ago. One is climate change and the spread of many things, including ticks, that seems to be going along with that. But then the other is in urban areas where there's limited access to hunting. You know, how do we manage deer in urban areas with limited access to hunting? How do we manage turkeys and now possibly bears?
Absolutely. As you get into areas that are more populated, there's more people, more residences, more development. It does get more challenging for hunters to pursue their activity. There can be safety issues in some cases.
Sure.
There's certainly, you know, in some cases, it's more of a challenge to find land on which you can hunt, where the landowners allow hunting. So it's a tough challenge, and it's one that a lot of other states probably face more than we do, but it's kind of a new one for us in terms of managing abundant wildlife populations, particularly these large big game species in areas where there are a lot of people.
I think the other thing about moose, and one of the nice things about the way the process is working out is involving the species and their interaction of the four species. And deer and moose is a classic example where in the past landowners have been told, we want more deer and we want more moose. Well, they're not necessarily compatible, and their requirements are different. And so now we're starting to have that discussion about, okay, where are the priorities? In certain parts of the state, deer may be more important than moose. But we haven't had that conversation generally in the past. And from a landowner, we've been asking for that kind of interaction for a while. And the department has, you know, that's a nice reason to put these four species together.
Joining us now on the phone, George Smith, who is an author, blogger, and the former director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine. George, thanks for calling us.
Sure.
I know that you've been writing about this process. Interested in a column you wrote very recently about should we restart the spring bear hunt? Do you think that that's one of the most important issues facing IFNW during this process?
Well, in the bear plan, they acknowledge or are seeking to harvest more bears. And there's two options, letting hunters in the fall shoot two or establishing the spring season, which was actually ended by the legislature. The Indian tribes offer spring hunting for bear, and it goes very well. Nobody complains. So that's one big controversial issue of many. And I just want to say that the steering committee, including Tom and the staff, Nate's leading the program, but Judy Camuso, the head of Wildlife Division, all the wildlife biologists, they are doing a phenomenal job on this. And it's got to be frustrating because in the old days, the plans, almost the first sentence would say, this is the plan, but we don't have the money to actually implement it. And they're kind of ignoring that now, but they do not have the money to implement all of the strategies and objectives and goals in these plans. And I think the public has to understand they're not contributing anything to the management and the research on these animals. And I tried for many years to change that without any luck. Now, just quickly on the other ones, turkeys. We only have 16,000 people buying turkey permit, and only 5,000 of them hunting in the fall. It's not a popular sport. You'd even have to question, given all the complaints from farmers and others, whether it was a sensible strategy to introduce them when so few people have any interest in hunting them. But there are lots of turkey issues in the plan. Deer. I write a lot about Lyme disease. I helped Monhegan get a permit to kill all the deer. They had the highest per capita cases of Lyme. They killed all the deer on the island. They haven't had any Lyme since. And this is going to be a growing problem. There's some research from Connecticut that shows if you get the deer population down low enough, it isn't as much of a problem. So that's a big issue now that has never been an issue in the plans. I would disagree with Nate a little bit on moose. I mean, we've gone from 4,000 to 2,000 permits in just a couple of years. I call that alarming. I think we're seeing some really devastating impact, 65% of the calves dying in the winter and maybe 30-35% of the cows. In four states, they've proposed moose to be put on the endangered species list. New Hampshire predicts that this year is going to be their last moose hunting season. So I'm much more alarmed about this, and they need to do a lot more research. I actually have a bill in that would get them some money to do more research. And I have a turkey bill in that would eliminate the permit to try to encourage more people to hunt and increase the bag limit.
Okay, so it's a lot to unpack. Nate, anything you want to talk about?
Yeah,
I know
just,
you and George know each other well.
Yeah, absolutely. We interact quite a bit. Just with regard to moose and the permit numbers, George is absolutely right. There has been a pretty substantial reduction in moose hunting permit numbers over the past few years. I would say that for the most part, that was intentional. We actually went through a period of several years where we increased moose permits with the express goal of reducing the moose population in some parts of the state where vehicle collisions were a major issue. That was part of our last moose management plan. Once those moose populations were reduced down to a level where vehicle collisions were a little more reasonable, not that there's ever a good number of moose vehicle collisions, we scaled back the permit numbers, and that was part of our management plan to do that. So I don't mean to discount the fact that we do have concerns with moose for researching some of those issues, but that permit reduction in particular, that was for the most part intentional.
All right. And George, thanks so much for calling in. And I should mention that we've put a link to one of your more recent blog posts on our MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. So if you'd like to check that out, go there.
Yeah, and I am writing about these plans. I go to the meetings, and Nate said there aren't any draft plans. I mean, what he means is they aren't ready for the public, but I go to the meetings and get them. My column tomorrow's on the deer plan, and the next day is the moose plan. So if they can go to georgesmithmaine.com and keep up with this stuff. And I really want to encourage the listeners to get involved in these plans. They're hugely important, and there are a lot of critical issues.
George, thanks for calling in. We'll try to get to some of these callers before our break. Let's see. We'll go to Mike, who's calling from Damariscotta. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry. I clicked the button wrong. Go ahead. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
So I'm on about the major cause of mortality in moose. And I'm not a moose biologist. I'm just a retired scientist. But it occurred to me that if it's ticks, there may be a way that you can address it. And it's just as close as our dogs and cats in our house. And that is products that can be administered to animals like Frontline that will last with them for months and provide them for protection from ticks. I've heard awful stories about ticks being able to exsanguinate a moose, that is, suck it dry. I don't know if that's actually true, but just the thought of it is enough to make you want to do some investigating.
Nate?
These drugs are fairly safe. The dogs and cats that we use them on are well tolerated well, and I don't see why we couldn't, for example, get a helicopter, a paint gun, and paintballs loaded up with this pesticide and just splot it on them and let them absorb it, and they'll be good for 2 or 3 months.
Okay, I'm going to let Nate respond.
Sure, just really quickly. Certainly death by tick is not pleasant. And you're right, essentially the animals die from blood loss and sort of an electrolyte imbalance that results from blood loss. In terms of, different treatments that we could use to minimize the impact of tick, there are some different types of vaccinations and products that in theory, could be used. Where the challenge is with the logistics of doing that. And so to go around in a helicopter and actually capture moose or apply some sort of medication would be extremely expensive. We actually do moose surveys by helicopter now. We probably have crews up today, or certainly last week we had folks up in the air, and they're very, very expensive. And that's just flying a representative area to try to count moose. So the expense of actually trying to capture or apply a treatment like that just wouldn't be feasible for us.
Mike, thanks for your call. What is the estimate of the moose population in Maine right now?
We actually don't have, a recent estimate. Our estimates have changed a little bit over time, mostly due to changes in methodology. We're now using aerial surveys, and really what we track with most wildlife and moose included is trends in populations. So we don't have a current moose population estimate for the whole state right now.
Okay, we'll go to an email here from Jan. She writes, I don't know about bears, but the best way to control the population of turkeys, deer, and moose is to increase the wolf population.
Yeah, that would likely have an impact. Certainly, wolves, aren't present in Maine now, as far as we're aware. And I don't think there's any plans on the part of our department to change that.
Okay. Well, we do have another break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the law offices of Joe Bornstein, a statewide practice representing injured and disabled Mainers since 1974. JoeBornstein.com.
The U.S. men's national soccer team suffered two qualifying losses late last year, putting their World Cup hopes in jeopardy. Now, a new coach has helped revive the team.
Obviously, it's not an easy situation being down at the bottom, but our aim is to make up for lost ground real quick.
I'm Ari Shapiro, building a winning team, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered with Nora Flaherty from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. And coming up in about 20 minutes in our Public Affairs Hour, the Commonwealth Club of California welcomes physician and astronaut Dr. Mae Jemison. Dr. Jemison is devoted to getting more girls, young women, and minorities into careers in STEM areas, science, tech, engineering, and math. Again, that's coming up in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Managing Big Game in Maine. With me today, Tom Doak, the executive director of the Small Woodland Owners Association of Maine, and Nate Webb is a biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. We have lots of calls to get through, lots of emails. Sure, we won't get to them all, but we're going to ask everybody to try to be brief. Lindy in Southwest Harbor, go ahead.
Discussion. Two questions. I hope you'll answer both of them. What is the source of your funding? And also, would your organization be making a public comment as to President Trump issuing a gag order against EPA today?
Okay, thanks. And is IFNW funded by hunting permits primarily?
We have two primary funding sources. Those are federal excise taxes on firearms, ammunition, archery equipment. Those fund our wildlife programs. There's a similar source of funding for fisheries that comes from taxes on fishing equipment and boat fuel. We also receive fees from hunting and trapping licenses, and in the case of fishing license, we do receive some general fund money as well for certain programs, and there's some other sources of funding, but the majority of our funding does come from hunting license fees and excise taxes on hunting equipment.
Okay, and before I go to the next question, I have one of my own. I want to circle back to something George Smith says, and he's written about maybe reintroducing a spring bear hunt in Maine. Is that going to be part of the draft plan?
The draft plan currently, it does discuss spring hunting season for bear as a potential alternative to increase harvest. There are a number of potential issues with the spring season. It's not something that I think we're likely going to pursue in the near future.
I'm on the steering committee, and I don't think there's any interest in that. And also, from a landowner point of view, that's the worst time to be on roads for landowners and damage the roads. So I think it's highly, highly unlikely we'll see a spring bear hunt.
And here's an email from Leah, a comment. I was surprised to learn that only 1 in 4 were not happy with turkeys. We are motorcyclists, and turkeys are very dangerous for us. Of course, deer are as well, but they tend to be out after dusk, so we try to get to our destination by then. Turkeys, on the other hand, are out all day. I had a very near collision, and others in our club have hit them. Please take this into consideration. So there you go, Nate. Something for your list of comments on turkeys. We have Randy in Winterport on the line. Hi, Randy. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for having patience with some of the ideas that I'm sure come across your desk and you hear in town meetings. Two quick comments. One is I grew up in Waldo County, and back in the 80s there were lots of deer and weren't any turkeys and coyotes. And now we have lots of turkeys and coyotes. And I applaud the department for looking at turkeys and deer concurrently, but maybe you could comment on why you're not looking at coyotes in the same the same time as deer. And before you answer that, I just pile on with George's comment about deer ticks, and it's a public health issue, and Mount Desert Island is ground zero at this point.
And Randy, I should add that I have an email in front of me from Elizabeth also asking about coyotes and their role in managing the deer population. I know that this is a real emotional issue. We could probably do several programs just on this alone. But Nate, what is the thinking right now is about the interaction between coyotes or coyotes, as some people call them, and deer?
Right, sure. So this plan, it does deal with these four big game species. It doesn't deal with coyotes in a comprehensive way, but it does reference the impact that coyotes have on deer in particular as a predator in the state. So there is information in the plan on coyote predation on deer, as well as bear predation on deer fawns, actually. So you will see some recommended approaches to work on that issue, particularly in northern Maine, where we're trying to increase the deer herd, and coyote predation may be one of the main factors that are limiting deer in that part of the state. I will say that, as I mentioned earlier, the department does do planning on a wide variety of species, and I expect that in the future, potentially in the near future, we'll be looking at a management plan for coyotes and likely some other fur bearer species as well.
We'll have you back on the program for that if you'll come. And Elizabeth, I should add to her email, she says she understands coyotes have more resistance to Lyme disease than other small mammals, and because of that, they eat white-footed mice and interrupt the transmission. Is that your understanding as well?
So, yeah, the spread of Lyme disease, it's complicated in the sense that there are multiple hosts for ticks. So typically, at the nymphal stage, the ticks are on a small mammal species, a mouse or a vole, something similar. And then typically their adult host is most often a deer. So species that limit or reduce the population levels of those smaller animals, at least in theory, could have an impact at reducing Lyme disease. What we have found, though, through research across the Northeast, is that the most successful way at reducing the prevalence of Lyme disease is actually managing the deer population.
You simply won't be able to reduce that small rodent population enough to really have an impact, but you could on a deer population. So that's really that's really where the effort should be.
It would be impractical to have a mice hunt.
Yeah.
We're going to go to Mark and Porter. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. Two questions for your panel today this afternoon. First of all, is the state Inland Fisheries and Industries really considering the 3-point law for the state of Maine to help with the attractive maybe rural hunters to the state? And second question is, are they considering a wildlife management plan for the mountain lion that has been sighted in the state of Maine? Thank you.
Okay, Mark, thank you. Did you understand the first part of his question? Because I had a hard time understanding
it. Yeah, I believe you're talking about antler point restrictions for deer. Is that correct?
Mark, are you talking about antler point? Oh, Mark dropped off.
Okay, so I believe he was referencing the potential to require antler point restrictions for deer. And so what that would mean is that for deer hunters, they would be required to ensure that before they shot a buck deer that it had at least 3 points on one antler, for example. There has been quite a bit of discussion on that issue. It was actually a very explicit survey question in the public questionnaire that we did, and we actually got mixed feedback. More hunters were opposed to that idea than supported it, but there was a diversity of opinions, and there was quite a bit of support as well. So that's something I think we'll probably continue to have conversations on. I will say that for the most part in Maine, we have a very healthy deer herd in the sense that we have a lot of pretty nice mature deer, mature bucks. So the real reason for those antler point restrictions, we're not convinced that they would be necessary in Maine, that they would resolve any issues here. We think our buck population is actually doing pretty well. With regard to mountain lions, I am aware there have been some potential sightings of mountain lions. As far as I'm aware, there hasn't been any confirmation of a breeding population. There could be certainly some lone individuals traveling through the state or that are released into the wild from captivity, but I don't think we would develop a management plan until we have an actual population here that's present in the state.
I have an email here, and I'm going to let you respond, Nate, to a criticism. I suspect that you all hear something like this from time to time. Why would anyone want to call into a radio program that is propaganda for Maine IFNW? A complete waste of time. There are many people not happy with Maine's IFNW wildlife plan, but you'd never know it from your coverage of this agency. They are, by definition, a captured government agency catering only to the special interest needs of hunters and trappers in this state.
We do hear feedback like that from time to time. As part of this planning process and some other work that the department has done recently, we've actually made a very concerted effort to reach out to the broader public. We've put a lot of effort and actually spent quite a bit of funding trying to do surveys and hold public meetings and hold focus groups to represent the perspectives of the broader population in the state, not just hunters, not just trappers, not just landowners. So we really do work for the people of the state of Maine. It's right in our mandate from the legislature, and we take that very seriously.
Well, and having been involved in this effort and several others in the department, I can tell you that the department does do a pretty good job of reaching out and trying to make sure that all those individual ideas are heard. And from a landowner point of view, they're not beholden to us. They certainly listen to the concerns of landowners and have been generally responsive to the concerns of landowners.
I would just add to that quickly. You know, we're here today talking about big game. We also manage species like bald eagles and salamanders and reptiles and insects and fish, including a lot of fish that aren't targeted by anglers. So we're talking about species today that are certainly hunted, but we manage all wildlife in the state.
And from a landowner point of view, you know, the non-game species are often more important than the game species to many landowners. And so, you know, the department's done a very good job of interacting with us.
We're going to go to Bob in South Portland. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks, Jennifer. Nate, until inland fisheries and wildlife and other state wildlife agencies start having a healthy, proactive approach towards natural predators and what they do in every ecosystem, I really don't take what you say all that seriously. Wherever there's natural predators, wolves, mountain lions, coyotes, in abundance, and their numbers are regulated by nature, they don't need to be regulated by people, the prey species are healthier, they're held in check, their numbers, animals that are tick infested are taken by these predators. So I agree with that email that you just read, Jennifer. I think IFNW and the other person there who's kind of supporting IFNW, it is a captured agency. It does not represent real science. It represents hunters and trappers and
Bob,
prejudice.
I need to ask you something. Are you advocating that we introduce mountain lions and wolves into southern Maine where there are too many deer?
I'm not advocating that, Jennifer. They would come back naturally. There are wolves here right now, by the way. IFW knows that. It's just that they're allowed to be killed, and they're called eastern coyotes.
Okay, I'm going to let Nate respond because we're running short on time and have a lot of calls and emails.
Yeah, just quickly, any wolf or mountain lion that that did come into the state of Maine, either naturally or otherwise, would actually be protected under our state wildlife laws. There is no hunting or trapping season for those species, so they would receive protection if they did come into the state. And I will just mention on a personal note that I actually went to graduate school and did my PhD on wolves in the West. So I'm passionate about all wildlife. I believe that predators certainly have a very important role to play, and I think that perspective is widely reflected in our agency. But we live in a state where there's a lot of people. There's private landowners trying to make a living in some cases on their land, and we have to try to balance everything.
All right. Thanks, Bob, for calling in. We have an email here from Kevin in Surrey. With the state considering awarding more permits to Mainers versus those from away, I've been putting in the lottery to tag for 15 years only to come up empty. I know there is money from away, dependents, but those moose belong to Mainers. Is that one of the things you're looking at in this plan, Nate, is rebalancing the number of permits between people from outside of the state and people from inside of the state?
We have had some conversations about that issue, and certainly we do hear that perspective quite commonly. Currently, no more than 10% of the moose permits can be allocated to non-residents. That permit lottery is actually very competitive. The percent chance that a non-resident has of drawing a permit is actually quite a bit lower than the chance for residents. But certainly I think there'll always be a perspective among some residents that if we allow non-resident hunting, that perhaps isn't a fair allocation of that resource. But we do have limits on it, and certainly there's no possibility that a large number of those permits could go to non-residents.
Okay, I'm going to try to squeeze in one more question here. Lawton from Penobscot, if you could be brief, that would be great.
Yes, I was just wondering the species of the fall-winter tick that affects the moose so badly. Is it different than the regular gray wood tick? Thank you.
Yeah, so it's actually it is the winter tick, which is a different species than I think what you're thinking of with the wood tick.
Okay, Lawton, thanks for your call. And since we're almost out of time, I want to give you a chance, Nate, to talk about what's next and also how people who are listening to this program and have a comment, like our motorcyclist who commented about turkeys, where does one go to make that comment?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned earlier, we're actually in the midst of drafting the actual plan itself. We've had a lot of conversations about what the plan will contain, and now it's putting pen to paper, so to speak. Once we have that draft compiled, we will release it for public comment. That will be available on our website for folks to take a look at and let us know if we're missing something or if folks think we should change some of the recommendations in that plan. There will be an opportunity for that. I expect we'll announce that via a press release and other news media.
All right. And how long do you think it'll be before that draft plan
Probably
is out?
Probably a couple months. We have
a couple months, looking at March.
That's my estimate at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
Quite a bit of work before us, but it is progressing pretty well.
Okay. Well, I thank you both for being here and everyone who called or emailed in. And I'm sorry I was not able to get to all the commenters. Lots of people interested in this topic. Nate Webb, a biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Tom Doak, executive director of the Small Woodland Owners Association of Maine. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 9 o'clock so that you can give a listen to a new program called Indivisible. It's a live call-in program covering the political transition in Washington and around the country, and we're trying it out, so let us know what you think of it. Tomorrow on the program, comedian Lewis Black joins me for what I'm sure will be a sedate, calm conversation that will not involve any screaming, ranting, or other high decibel diatribes. And if you don't know who Lewis Black is, that was a joke. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.